order. I'm sorry for the delay.
Senator Dyson, are you ready on Senate Bill 54?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you like to move version U for Senate Bill 54?
Yes, ma'am. I move CS for Senate Bill 54 Finance, the / U version.
I'll object just for explanation and remind me to remove my objection when we're finished with the explanation.
Ma'am.
Jason, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Jason Hooley, Office of Senator Fred Dyson. It's a sad fact, Madam Chair, that Alaska consistently ranks among the worst of the states for our rate of sexual assault. In a recent FBI report documented the rate of sexual assault in Alaska is 3 times the national average. Senate Bill 54 creates the availability of protective orders for victims of sexual assault, and our bill only deals with sexual assault that occurs outside of domestic violence. It's traditionally held that most sexual assaults, even in Alaska, occur within domestic relationships or acquaintances or relatives, but nonetheless, it happens between strangers, and this bill and this version allows those victims to seek protective orders identical to the provisions of stalking protective orders. Excuse me. So there's 3 different types of protective orders available: 6-month emergency orders for 72 hours, and thirdly, ex parte orders for 20 days. That's all, Madam Chair.
Is that ex parte order similar to the current one for domestic violence that we passed in about 96 or 97?
Yes, ma'am.
What we found, Madam Chair, the police officer came to us and he's deals with sexual assault, went to the judge to get a restraining order against the perpetrator, and the judge said, no, I can only do it under Alaska law for stalking or domestic violence. And so this just adds another category for which our judges are free to give a restraining order if they believe the evidence presented justifies it.
And what was the discussion in judiciary on ex parte?
I don't remember. Do you remember any?
Madam Chair, I don't recall that the Judiciary Committee debated ex parte orders specifically because...
Okay, explain to me again what an ex parte order is. Just so that I kind of remember.
Section 7 of the bill on page 3 deals with ex parte orders, and the petitioner can approach the court, and if the court establishes probable cause that sexual assault has occurred and that a protective order is necessary to protect them from further assault, the court can grant them an ex parte order without the presence of the respondent.
Does the person who's being accused have to know about the court proceeding?
Through the chair, attempted service has to be made, but it doesn't have to be. You don't have to serve them as long as you try to serve them. So that you have to make your best efforts to serve the responding party, but if you are unable to do so, the court can proceed with an ex parte order. It's the same as with domestic violence and with stalking.
And I thought that the entire time we did the domestic violence legislation, I think that's very troublesome. What has been the experience generally? I mean, I've gotten calls on this that people were very uncomfortable, that they found they had been charged, I mean, or had rights taken away, and yet they were not in on the court hearing are being informed, and yet they have had, you know, some fairly severe restrictions placed on their comings and goings, and I'm certainly not in favor of anyone being able to mistreat anyone in any way whatsoever, but I'm also very concerned that we're expanding that capacity to have a court hearing without the person being there.
Well, perhaps if there's somebody from, you have to distinguish, I think, between this type of ex parte order and one in domestic violence. Because a domestic violence restraining order, a judge has a lot more authority to grant remedies than a stalking.
Okay, explain to me what the difference is for this then.
In terms of the remedies?
Well, what is the circumstance under which the court case would be heard, and what would the person who's being accused get to know?
Excuse me, for this protective order, a person can come in and say, I have been sexually assaulted, and if the judge finds that there is probable cause to believe that that's correct, and the person who's asking for the restraining order says, and I've tried to serve the person who sexually assaulted me, but I have been unable to do so, the court can go ahead and grant remedies for, in this case, to cease sexually assaulting that person, which is one of the remedies, to stay away from the person, the victim's home. I say victim, but this is not a criminal matter. This is a more of a civil matter. But the person who's asking for the restraining order, to stop contacting the person, to stay away from that person's home or place of work, unless that the respondent lives and works in the same place, at which point the court may not grant a restraining order unless the person has been actually served. And then for a sexual assault restraining order, this bill adds two remedies. First is to pay for counseling that the victim or the requester may need, and the other is kind of a catch-all remedy, whatever relief the court deems is necessary to protect the person who is requesting the restraining order. I would say that once one of these ex parte orders is granted, the person against whom it is ordered has the right to come in and ask for a modification at any time.
So it involves, you prohibit the respondent from threatening to commit or committing stalking or sexual assault,
right.
Prohibit the respondent from telephoning, contacting, or otherwise communicating directly or indirectly with the petitioner or a designated household member, etc. Direct the respondent to stay away from the residence, school, or place of employment, or any specified place frequented by the petitioner. Or, however, the court may order the respondent to stay away from the respondent's own residence, school, or place of employment only if the respondent has been provided actual notice of the opportunity to appear and be heard on the petition. Is that old language from the DV?
That is current law for stalking protective order.
Protective order stalking, for stalking.
For stalking, okay. Yes, that's current law.
And Madam Chair, our first version of this, we erroneously replicated the DV stuff, and then we repented and changed it significantly more appropriately to replicate the stalking.
Okay. What leeway in number four, page 3, line 9, order other relief, what would that be? What might that include?
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I'm not looking at that.
Page 3, line 4, line 9, parents 4.
Do you have version U, Annie?
You have R.
I have R. I'm sorry.
Me too.
Anyway, let me see yours.
This is provision she's asking.
That's kind of a catch-all relief provision. We do it in a lot of cases, including domestic violence, even though it's statutory relief is very much broader than it is for stalking or this proposed measure for sexual assault. Just because there might be a certain case where relief is appropriate for this particular requester, but it's not specified. And the idea is that legislators can't think of every possible situation, so we give the court discretion to order relief if necessary in a particular case.
Okay. You know, Jason, I think it might be good, because I think Annie mentioned something as being contained in this bill that was removed in version U. Did she not? Reason to eliminate reimbursement.
I apologize.
Okay. I just want to be sure we had that on the record. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that the order for counseling was it allowed the court to order counseling, responded to pay for counseling. That has been removed from this bill. I apologize.
Okay. Okay. And could you go over to page 4, line 15? And what does that mean?
The Department of Public Safety maintains a registry of protective orders for domestic violence. When the legislature adopted the stalking protective orders, it didn't provide that protective orders for stranger stalking should be entered into the registry. This bill, in this form now, provides that, I really apologize for my voice, that protective orders for stranger stalking, and stranger sexual assault may be entered in the central registry in the Department of Public Safety, so that police officers, when they happen to stop a person or contact a person, are able to access that information in these cases too.
Okay, it shall be entered in there.
That's
line
correct.
9. Okay. Okay. Now, is that something that stays in a place forever?
There are procedures to remove it, I believe, but I don't think they are automatic. I stand to be corrected, but as I recall, there are procedures to remove it. But
and that's public information?
Yes.
Is there anything other consequence of being on a registry like that that might
to my knowledge,
impugn
no.
or?
It's just so that it really is important in domestic violence when in a case when a police officer is going to a residence and there are accusations on both sides of violence, that it's important for a police officer to be able to check to see what orders have been issued in the past. So that an officer can make a decision based on what they see and he or she sees in front of them and what has happened in the past. But I don't know that it's used for any other purpose. But
is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Okay, I'm going to hold this. I want to talk to you later, Senator Dyson. Okay, thanks. We'll come back to that. Senate Bill, House Bill 106, Senior Care Program. Brief of these, please. George? Brett, for Senate Bill 106.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joel Gilbertson, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. To my left is John Sherwood, who works in the Commissioner's Office for the Department. What you have before you is a committee substitute for House Bill 106, and this bill was introduced at the request of the Governor and is a bill that will strengthen the currently existing senior care program, which is providing assistance to low-income seniors in this state. Under the legislation before you, and actually probably as a brief bit of background, the legislature last year did pass legislation establishing the senior care program. The program is targeted to assist seniors with the cost of prescription drugs, which currently the Medicare program at the federal level does not cover. Seniors are paying for prescription drug costs either out of pocket or by purchasing a supplemental insurance policy. The legislation that was passed last year established a cash assistance program for seniors below 135% of poverty, and that's $120 per month, and also established a prescription drug subsidy for seniors between 135% and 150% of poverty. The legislation today will accomplish two things. One is it will extend the cash assistance benefit for those seniors who are below 135% of poverty. That income threshold for an individual is slightly over $16,000, and for a couple is about $21,600. Those individuals will be allowed to have liquid assets up to $6,000 for a single individual and $9,000 for a couple. They'll receive $120 a month or $1,440 in cash assistance per year. And this money will help support them as they transition into the new Medicare Part D drug benefit, which we expect to begin at the early part of next year. The bill will also extend prescription drug assistance to seniors between 135% and 175% of poverty. 175% of poverty level at the highest amount is $20,900 for an individual and just over $28,000 for a couple. Those individuals, when the Part D drug benefit and when Medicare begins its prescription drug benefit next year, those all seniors who want to participate in that will have to enroll, and they will have a premium and a deductible, separate and distinct, and in addition to their existing premiums and deductibles that they pay for Medicare. And that will be about $35 a month, and then a deductible of $250. So the individual out-of-pocket costs will be $670. Under this proposal for seniors below 75% of poverty, the state of Alaska, through the Senior Care Program, will assist seniors in paying those costs. I think a question that has come up occasionally is, why do we not extend that prescription drug benefit to seniors below 135% of poverty? The answer is that under the federal passed legislation, there is no premium and deductible for seniors below 135% of poverty. The federal plan covers that completely. And so there is no way for us to extend a drug benefit to that population. We are anticipating that this program will continue to serve roughly the same number of seniors we serve right now through the cash assistance program, and that's just under 7,000. We've estimated we will serve 7,000. And for the prescription drug assistance between 135% of poverty and 175% of poverty, we anticipate we'll serve about 4,000 seniors. And Madam Chair, I don't know if you'd like me to walk through the fiscal notes very briefly. For the benefit of the members, to make this a little bit easier, because there are a number of fiscal notes, what you'll see on page 3 of fiscal note number 8 is a sort of a, what I often refer to as a cheat sheet, which we kind of summarize how this will actually operate across the fiscal notes. So if you don't have that, we can certainly get it for you. But what this essentially summarizes is what you'll see at the top are there are the two populations that will be served. You'll have the seniors below 135% of poverty. It's been a fairly stable population, and we do anticipate we'll continue to serve roughly 7,000 seniors. And the cost of that benefit, you can see under the total cost line, just over $5 million for FY06, and a little over $10 million for FY07. The reason for that difference is that this program, that this legislation that we passed, that is being proposed right now in House Bill 106, is an extension on the existing program, and the existing program runs through January 1 of 2006. So this is only half a year for the second half of fiscal year 2006, and that's why the number is roughly half in FY06. The cost of the drug benefit, which is the population between 135% and 175% of poverty, we anticipate once it runs for a full year will be $2.6 million. If we head a little bit farther down that sheet, what you'll see is combined program and administrative costs, sort of these summary lines down at the bottom. And for FY06, we anticipate the combined program administrative cost to be $6.8 million in FY06 and $13.2 million in FY07. And again, this is page 3 of fiscal note 8, Senator Wilson. The next line down is the projected balance in the Senior Care Fund. And when the Senior Care Program was passed by the legislature last year, the legislature actually established a fund and forward funded the program through the first half of fiscal year 06. And we are projecting to actually have a surplus in that account at that time. And that is the amount that you see there. We project on January 1 of 2006 still to have just over $8 million in the Senior Care Fund. And as this fiscal note shows, we project that the general fund need for fiscal year 06 will be zero, and that there will be a draw on that fund account for the $6.8 million. So we'll then carry forward $1.2 million from that account, and that $1.2 million will need to be married up with an $11.9 million general fund request to meet the $13 million cost in FY07. And Madam Chair, for the convenience of members, we sort of put together a chart as well, which will be in your package, which sort of explains how this will work. That sort of looks through the eligibility criteria. I think I've gone through most of those. Right now, seniors are not receiving any prescription drug assistance from the federal government other than a prescription drug discount card that they're eligible for. And some low-income seniors are also eligible for a drug subsidy. The enrollment and the take-up of that has been much slower than the federal agency projected. There's going to be a lot of confusion this year, I think, as the new Medicare drug benefit starts to be marketed to seniors. And I think there's going to be a number of questions even going into the first part of next year. The governor's legislation that is proposed before you really, I think, takes some of that confusion off the table and take that burden off of seniors as the program gets up and running and as it goes through probably its first year of operation. The legislation before you does include a sunset. The sunset for this legislation is at the closeout of fiscal year 2007. And language is included in the bill that any funds in excess of incurred costs on June 30th of 2007 would revert back to the general fund.
Are there questions for the commissioner? Logan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, is it the federal poverty level for Alaska? So it's the Alaska's federal poverty level.
Response to the Chair, Senator Wilkin, it is correct. Those numbers are the Alaska federal poverty level, which is adjusted up by about 25% off the national. So compared to a low of 48, 175% of poverty would actually be a little over 200% of poverty.
Okay, thanks. And do you count the permanent fund dividend check in that eligibility calculation?
In this program?
No, we would not. Under statute, we're to disregard the permanent fund dividend unless required by federal law.
So that would be consistent with how all the hold harmless provisions are for public assistance programs.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I look at the $1.2 million balance that's going to be there on January 1st of 06, why not use that amount of money to go ahead and increase the $120 to 100 and whatever would zero out that account, to zero out the balance?
Responding to the Chair, Senator Olson, we project on January 1st of 2006 to have $8 million in the fund. Mm-hmm. We'll need $6.8 million to get through fiscal year 2006, so that can be fully paid for within the fund. We're going to carry forward that $1.2 million into FY07 to help pay for some of the FY07 costs, but the FY07 costs are actually going to be $13 million, and so we're still going to need to put in another almost $12 million of general fund. So the full trust fund account will be depleted at the completion of this program. At the end of 07. In fact, we're going to need almost a $12 million general fund addition in 07.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilkin, can I get you to move the draft CS so that we can be talking about the proper document?
Madam Chair, move that the committee adopt Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 106 Finance Version I, done by Michelle on 5605 as our working document.
And that is the document that Commissioner Gilbertson has just presented to us.
My apologies, Madam Chair.
That's okay. No, that's my forgetfulness, so that's fine. Are there any questions for the Commissioner? I know that the administration is anxious to get this through and have the program continue rather seamlessly so that we continue to assist those people who are in need. Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move that House Bill 106 be reported from committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there objection? Senate Bill 106 Finance moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. A brief at ease.